This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. It's like a prime time Let's Get Legal here in the evening hours. Yeah, we're going to let loose here a little bit, kick off our shoes, answer some pressing, fun legal questions. 312-981-7200. I say that sarcastically, but I've got so many questions. And the two gentlemen I've got across from me right now are incredible. They're just good human beings. I love talking to them. Michael Miller, Jim McGing, thanks for coming in here today.
Hi, John. We're really happy to be here. We're happy you had us back. I'm surprised you had us back.
Yeah, absolutely happy to be here.
Yeah, right, exactly. You guys represent, obviously, Miller and McGing, attorneys at law. You do some great work. Okay, before we get to personal injury, I guess this is fall under that category, because we got a lot of interesting things to talk about, especially about knowing if you have a workers' compensation claim, what to do. That's going to be kind of the crux of our conversation. But I've been watching a lot of golf lately. I've been playing even more of it. Game's not getting any better playing. It's fun to watch, though. I saw a spectator get smacked by a ball at the Ryder Cup. He or she seems okay. From a legal perspective, if you're a spectator at a golf tournament and you get hit, even if, let's say, you were looking the other way or whatever, your fault or not, do you have a case or no?
Probably not, John, because you probably signed your life away when you bought that ticket.
Really? And those things, could, like, if you read the back of a baseball ticket, it's on there, too. Those are pretty strong contracts?
Absolutely. They've been challenged. Sometimes you can get around them depending on the circumstances and the facts. But for the most part, when you buy one of those tickets, you're agreeing to sit in that particular area, mm-hmm. or stand in that area, and you assume the risk. And there have been inroads, there have been cases that have come down where you know, people have been successful litigating them, but it's an uphill battle, and it's not a battle that most people win.
All right, well, you and I are going to go golfing together sometime soon here, Michael.
I just invited you back off the air.
Oh, I'm in. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't. Was that not to share? Yeah. Let's say we're out golfing, and this wouldn't be all that unreal. Let's say I hit a ball, and I yell four, perhaps, because it's going the wrong way, and I hit someone else. Am I liable for that? What can they sue the golf course? Me? How does that work?
Well, they can sue you for sure for negligence. And here's the interesting thing, that this is something that a lot of people don't know, and that's that your homeowner's insurance, so the homeowner's insurance of the golfer that struck you, covers his negligence, essentially, in hitting an errant shot.
Wait, homeowner's insurance?
Yes, exactly.
On the golf course?
Exactly.
My homeowner's insurance or his?
His. The person that's hitting the golf ball.
Poor guy.
The guy that's just the terrible golfer that hits you with the shot. His homeowner's insurance covers him and his negligence, so if you make a claim against him, it's going to be covered. And a lot of people just don't know that. And that's something. It's an extension of your homeowner's policy. And, you know, any acts of negligence on the part of an insured, which is the person that lives in the house, or someone, his children, all covered.
Hold on. And Jim McGing, if you have anything, feel free to jump on. But now I got a follow-up. Because I used to be a homeowner, had a homeowner's insurance policy. Now I rent. So am I not covered then because I don't have homeowner's insurance?
If you have renter's insurance, that would cover as
really?
Well. Really? Absolutely.
My renter's insurance covers me on a golf cart course when I have an errant shot at someone.
Exactly.
When you're golfing two or three times a week, as you told us before we went on the air.
Now, that was definitely not for public consumption, Jim. Yes. I've been doing a lot. I'm always so curious about it because I also know that, and this has happened, is you have an errant shot off a tee and it hits through someone's window. That's my responsibility, right, as the bad golfer?
As the bad golfer. And in fact, I used to live on a golf course. I lived on the seventh green of a golf course, and I ended up having, you know, the right side of my house was dented. It looked like, you know, looked like I'd been pelted by hail, you know, continuously.
Every day.
And then the interesting thing is that I found a Titleist in my basement. It had gone through the basement window.
Oh.
And lo and behold, I come home and there's a Titleist golf ball sitting on my basement floor. So and one went through my dining room window, too. So suffice it to say, I had to sell the house when my son was born and he started walking because I realized that when he walked around the yard,
this was
not going to end well. So,
would you have had to catch the person when they did it in order to have a case?
Exactly. And that obviously didn't happen in those situations because I was away. I was not home when the thing happened. But my short game was great in those during those years.
Yeah, because you had all of these Titleists you could then use on the course yourself.
Right.
And from your basement.
And I lived right there. So it was an amazing opportunity to improve your short game, but not good for your house.
Yeah. Boy, we're answering a lot of my personal questions here today about my golf game. 312-981-7200 if you guys have any about yours. And yeah, we're getting a lot of texts, people reminding about, you know, in baseball games where they've added the netting now and to help out some people. The Cubs player a couple of years ago, there's a little girl that was hurt, unfortunately. There's been even, I mean, there's been at a Columbus Blue Jackets hockey game years ago. Unfortunately, a teenage girl died as a result of that. But obviously, it's something to be aware of anytime
you're there. In many of those sports, it's an inability to react. Also, baseball, the ball's coming off so quickly off the bat. Or in hockey, it's coming off, and you've seen that this netting's been added because there have been inroads in these court cases where judges have opened up avenues for liability for plaintiffs.
Yeah, that was a huge controversy when they added the netting. I couldn't wait until they did it. And people are like, well, get off your phones. Do you see how fast those balls are coming at you at 130 miles an hour? I don't care if you're on your phone or not. 312-981-7200, that's the phone number here. But the real reason we brought you here was not to answer all my sporting personal injury questions.
Not golf, John.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about workers' compensation because, you know, the reality of the world today, and it always has been, is that injuries happen on the job, and there's a lot of things you need to know as a worker to make sure that you're going to be covered okay, but there's a lot of things you have to do, right? Because I think a lot of people assume, oh, yeah, there's a policy at work, and this will get, you know, carried out fine, and there's a process for these things. No, it's up to the worker to do a lot of the work, the legwork, to make sure that they're okay.
Absolutely. It's up to the worker, John, but, you know, it's also up to their attorney to make sure that the case gets handled properly. And that's why we encourage, you know, your listeners, if they do get hurt at work, to call us, you know, because
when we say hurt at work, though, I think a lot of people, I mean, there's cases where you're like, okay, that was obvious. I was at the office or I was at this fell on me. My head hurts. My shoulder's broken. Okay. You got a workers' comp case, perhaps. I mean, but there's got to be cases where injuries happen slowly over time, or maybe you feel something days later. So
sure.
Okay. Well, how do you know if you have a case?
Okay, so one of the things you kind of were touching on there a little bit, John, is repetitive trauma.
Okay,
and repetitive trauma under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act is compensable, and you know it's usually in the context of carpal tunnel syndrome. You've probably heard of carpal tunnel. Your listeners have heard of carpal tunnel. You know the checkers at the grocery stores. You know they're constantly moving items, scanning items all day long. You know 5 days a week. They are the poster children for getting carpal tunnel syndrome, and I've handled many cases.
The grocery store workers.
The grocery store workers, yeah.
Because I always picture someone in an office.
Data entry is a bit of
that makes sense.
Yeah. Data entry and grocery store workers.
Trades people doing repetitive actions.
Right. So those types of injuries for those types of people, they are compensable under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act under the theory of repetitive trauma, which has been recognized for many, many, many years in Illinois. So those people, they can make, you know, workers' compensation claims. And, you know, you always say, well, when was the accident? Well, the accident is deemed to be the first date of medical treatment.
Okay.
So the first day that they go in and they tell the doctor, you know, my wrist, you know, it's all numb. And they say, well, what do you do for a living? Well, you know, I'm a checker at, you know, the grocery store. So that's when the light bulbs go off and they have compensable claims under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act, no question.
I bet a lot of folks don't know that they do. Do you find that, Jim? Maybe that even some people like a repetitive case, or maybe they're a part-time worker, or maybe they, you know, they don't have much education in terms of what workers' compensation may be. They need to get educated on that because they may have a case.
They do. And what we see often is the labor unions, people where they're represented by unions, they do a good job of instructing their members about that, being aware of it. The medical community is very astute at identifying what the cause of these repetitive injuries are from. And when people go to see their doctors, they do a good job of identifying what the cause is, what could be the cause.
Now, I kind of brought up there actually an interesting question, too, about part-time workers versus full-time. Is there a difference in terms of workers' compensation based on what sort of employee you are?
No, they're both covered under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act. The issue you get into with full-time versus part-time is the rate. And that's something I'm going to talk about in a little bit. It was his average weekly wages. How much money does this particular employee make? Because that's the building block of all workers' compensation benefits is the average weekly wage. So if you work part-time, obviously you're probably making less than someone that works full-time, unless you're really smart. And so that's one of the things that's an important concept is how much did the employee make? And one of the things that, that Jim and I always do when we get a new workers' compensation case is we get a wage history on the employee, because we want to know what they made in those 52 weeks before they were injured, because that's the basis for the entire case.
Right.
And one of my, I've got my seven things to know if you ever heard in a work, you know, heard at work. And that's actually one of the things I was going to talk about is that, you know, don't trust the calculation of that particular average weekly wage. Don't leave it to some insurance adjuster. Make sure you or your attorneys calculate it properly, because that's how much you're going to get paid every week and how much you're going to get at the end. So you've got to be diligent. One of the things that, that kind of a saying in our office is trust but verify.
Okay.
So we love to verify by getting that wage history. And that's something Jim has been advocating and I've been advocating for a long time.
Okay. So that is one of the points. We'll expand on it a little bit later. We're going to go through the seven things to do if you get injured at work. I just like to for people to know who we're talking about here. And so we mentioned it could be part-time. It could be full-time. It could be an injury that's obvious or something repetitive over time. What about someone that is self-employed that does contracted work for other people? Because that's an area, I know a lot of people are self-employed these days. Maybe they're chasing a different passion than they had before. Are people that are contracted out eligible for workers' compensation?
That's a complicated question. If you're self-employed, unless you purchase, you know, workers' compensation insurance for yourself, you know, there's not going to be any coverage. Now, there's issues that, have come up, you know, throughout the years of loaned and borrowed employees. So if you're a contract employee and you work for another entity, usually there's an agreement between the entities as to who's going to provide the workers' compensation coverage.
Okay.
So in those cases, there is coverage. But if you're totally self-employed, you're out of luck on workers' comp unless you purchased insurance to cover yourself, which most people don't.
Yeah, and that's maybe something people should certainly consider, especially it depends on what they're doing.
Absolutely, especially these days, the way the economy has gone and the way people are working, you know, from home and, you know, and for themselves.
Yeah, for
sure. And what we were talking about, you know, not trusting and verifying, it also goes farther in terms of the identification of what their position is, because oftentimes an employer may designate someone as an independent contractor when they're really not. And if they're not, and there's elements that have to be demonstrated that somebody's really not an independent contractor and that they're actually an employee, then they would be covered under the workers' compensation also.
I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but I know that's what a lot of folks were talking about with Uber and Lyft and some of these ride shares, whether they were contractors or employees. And that was one of the things they were arguing in California was because I want to be insured by this company that I work 40 hours for. We don't have time to get into all of that. But tell you what, we're going to take a commercial break, 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. And then after the break, we're going to break down the seven things you need to know if you get injured at work. Here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Michael Miller, Jim McGing from Miller & McGing, attorneys at law. We're talking workers' compensation and a lot about my golf game earlier, but we moved on from that, fortunately, for the listener. By the way, I just want to make sure people know exactly where to go if they are interested in your services. If they're maybe driving at home, they're getting out of their car, WGNAccidentAttorneys.com, or they can call 773-467-8000. I'll give those numbers and email out again in just a little bit. Okay. Seven things to know if you get injured at work. And like we've covered, this applies to part-time, full-time, injuries that are obvious or ones that maybe have developed over time. So we've laid the foundation here. So if you think that you have an injury at work, what do you do?
Okay, well, the first thing you need to do, and this is very important, is that you need to make a written report with your employer. Okay?
With your employer?
With your employer. There's a form in Illinois that's used. It's called a Form 45. It's a simple form that your employer fills out, and it documents that you actually had an injury on a particular day and a particular time, and it basically has enough information in there to let everybody know later on, because it's later on when you have the problems,
right,
that there was an injury on that particular date and that particular time. Now, the question I get a lot from people is, you know, my employer won't take a report. They won't fill out a Form 45. They don't know what a Form 45 is.
Really? You know? So they go to HR and the people are like, well, I don't know.
Right. So
that doesn't sound good.
It doesn't sound good, but you'd be surprised at, you know, how often that these things happen. So, you know, notice is an important element under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act. You have to give, you know, your employer notice that you got hurt, right?
Right.
So what I tell people in that situation is just send an email to your supervisor explaining that you got hurt on a specific date, time, and place and the nature of your injury. That's good enough. That'll suffice, you know.
That's basically Form 45, do-it-yourself.
Do-it-yourself Form 45. And you know what? It's an important thing because you'd be surprised that what happens later on, you know, and the things that I've seen in my practice, that, you know, if it's in the Form 45, you're saved.
Yeah.
You know, because you can document that there was an accident. And a lot of times, John, it's human nature to think that, you know what, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Especially a lot of, you know, tradesmen, you know, construction workers.
Fight through it.
They fight through it, and they're our heroes, you know?
Right.
But, you know, that human nature tendency to think that I'm going to be okay is not necessarily good for your workers' compensation case. If you think you've been hurt, you know, in an accident at work, always document it by making a written report via Form 45 or sending an email.
So if you're on the fence, do it.
Exactly. So that's the number one thing.
Right.
You know, and it's the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon, as Mike said, in the trades for people to think, I'll be okay. You know, my back hurts today. They go home and it's worse. And then they don't report it till the next day. That's okay.
That's okay,
report
too.
Report it.
Right.
Yes.
No matter what.
They have some time to report it, but do it as soon as it's possible.
Yeah. I like that, too, the idea that there are a lot of people that just want to tough it out, that think that they can. Not me. I stubbed my toe. I'm writing Form 45. There's so many Form 45s in my file. No, you want to take it for serious cases.
Right.
But if you're ever on the fence, just do it. I mean, you're going to thank yourself later.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and I'm not advocating that you do it for every time you stub your toe, exactly
right.
What you said, but it's an important thing.
All right. That's step one.
That's number one.
We got to take another commercial break and then the news, but we've got you guys into the next hour as well. We'll go through the next six steps as well, because this is important stuff. I know there's a lot of listeners right now that may be experiencing this, that may know someone that is. If you have any additional questions, 312-981-7200, and you, no matter what, you can follow up with these guys at WGNAccidentAttorneys.com. Or you can call 773-467-8000. More with the folks from Miller and McGing after this in the news on WGN.
Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
Thank you very much. That's Ernie, his voice, good friend of mine here at WGN. And you heard him say Miller and McGing, and I've got the two gentlemen right here, Michael Miller and Jim McGing, from the law firm of Miller and McGing. We're talking about workers' compensation if you're just joining us. 312-981-7200 if you've got any questions yourself about who is eligible or what people should do. And that's really where we've pivoted now. The seven things you need to do if you think you have a workers' comp claim. So, Mr. Miller, recap what number one was for us.
Okay, absolutely. Number one is to always make a written report documenting your accident if you happen to get injured at work. And we talked about Form 45.
Yep.
And if the employer doesn't offer you a Form 45, send an email to your supervisor.
Jim, does that automatically trigger a investigation or what?
What it does is it protects you under the Illinois state statute. You only have 45 days to actually notify your employer.
Whoa.
And you don't want to wait that time. You want to report it right away under Form 45.
45 days seems quick.
It seems quick, but it's better for you to report it immediately. And then what that triggers, that Form 45, is that the employer under state law has to notify the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission that oversees all workers' compensation claims in Illinois. They don't do anything. It doesn't trigger some investigation by them unless there's a serious injury. Then that would be, of course, OSHA and some other regulatory agencies. But what it does is give them notice that there's been an injury, and they begin to take steps once a claim is actually filed by the employee.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. All right. Let's move on. Step number two.
Okay. Number two, John. And this is really, really important. And if you are injured at work, always give a detailed history of what happened when you go see the medical provider.
What happened at work?
Exactly. And by history, I mean explaining how you were injured and what part of your body was injured, basically. And, you know, a lot of people end up in emergency rooms. A lot of people end up at their own doctor. Some folks end up at what industrial clinics. I call them doc-in-the-boxes, you know, for lack of a better term. But, you know, that first visit is really the key, because that's when you're going to explain what happened to you, right?
Right.
And I'll give you an example of like three different histories that you could give, and you could probably figure out which one would be the best one
okay.
for your case. The first one, you'll say somebody hurts their knee, for example. I think I twisted my knee. That's the history. Well, the person writes down, I think I twisted my knee. Well, later on, that particular history would not be very good.
Sounds like a lot of guys I would know. They just go, yeah. like, I twisted my knee, fix it.
Exactly.
That's no good.
Second type of history that somebody may give is, I twisted my knee at work.
Uh-huh.
Much better.
Yeah, you're getting there.
Much better. But what I suggest and what I'm advocating and trying to tell your listeners here is that what they need to do is be as specific as possible. I caught my foot in a pallet, and I twisted my knee this afternoon at work, and now I have pain on the left side of my knee.
Very specific. And, Jim, you've been on the other side of this as a judge. I
imagine,
and you've seen this. I imagine those details that Michael's talking about are so key in cases.
Absolutely. I was the supervising judge of the Tax and Miscellaneous Division in the Law Division for the Circuit Court of Cook County. We heard all workers' compensation appeals in that section.
Oh, well, for the whole county?
For the entire county. And, you know, I've heard literally hundreds and hundreds of these cases, and that minutia can be really very important in a case.
See, this is why you want Miller and McGing. I'm telling you. You get the Miller, and then you get the McGing. Well, obviously.
You get the good golfer and the not-so-good golfer.
I was wondering how to frame that there, Michael.
I'm not spending so much time golfing.
The golfer and the
I'm
judge.
I'm working
exactly.
when he's golfing.
All right, what's step three, or most important things to do? Step three, if you're injured
okay,
at work.
Okay, so the history we've covered. Okay, so step three is, okay, let's say you are injured at work, okay? Mm-hmm. And now you're going to start receiving benefits. And one of the benefits that you're going to receive right away is called temporary total disability. And what that is it's a calculation based on how much money that you earn. Everybody, you know, has a different wage, you know, that they earn depending on the type of job that they have. So there's a concept called average weekly wage. Now, what is average weekly wage? Well, average weekly wage is basically the 52 weeks before you were injured.
Mm-hmm.
We get a wage history. We want to know what you made that 52 mm-hmm. weeks before you were injured. And then we divide by 52, and that gives us what you make on average. And that's the building block, John, for what your temporary total disability payments are. And the formula is basically two-thirds of your average weekly wage tax-free. And that's what you're going to get paid while you're off of work. Now, the third point here, and this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier, is that, you know, you need to, you know, drill down on that number, because that number is the basis for your temporary total disability, which is what you're going to get paid every week and pay your bills with.
Mm-hmm.
And also later on, how much you could potentially receive in a settlement and an award. And so one of the points, and my third point, is don't necessarily trust the insurance company's calculation of that particular average weekly wage. Do your own due diligence. Have it calculated, you know, through your employer, or if you were to contact us, we'll do it for you.
What about seasonal workers? Because that's not quite a 52-week thing.
Very good question. And that's the snafu that some people run into. A seasonal worker, you know, let's say they're a landscaper, for example, and they just work, you know, during the spring and summer months. Now, they've only got a partial year to mm-hmm. work with, right? Insurance companies, and I've seen this happen many times, will just, you know, take that partial year, whatever they made, they'll divide by 52. Wrong. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you divide by the actual number of weeks that were worked.
Right.
Exactly. And that's the fair way to do it. That's the legal way to do it. But that's not necessarily the way that it always gets done. So it's very important that in those situations, if you are a seasonal worker, that you do, you know, contact an attorney, because they will make sure that you get the benefits you're entitled to.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And sometimes those disputes are not easily settled, and they end up being an issue before the arbitrator, before the Illinois Workers' Comp Commission, and if the case is appealed to the circuit court, I've had that issue in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
How was it calculated? And people argue it was calculated incorrectly, and they should have gotten a higher amount.
Right, and it's important to know that at the front end. That saves you a lot of grief in the long run. All right, what's number four?
Well, before we get to number four, John, I want to mention one other thing on number three, and that's the inclusion of part-time work in your average weekly wage calculation.
Okay, so gigs on the side and stuff like that?
Exactly. And, you know, these days there's a lot of people that I know, you know, that have to work two jobs to make ends meet.
Right.
And so what the law says is that you can take that, you know, money, you know, from that second job, as long as your employer, your original employer where you were injured, knows that you're working a second job.
Okay.
They have to have that knowledge. And if they have that knowledge, then what we do is we combine both of those wages, and that increases your average weekly wage, which increases your weekly benefits and would increase your settlement at the end. So that's something a lot of people don't know. Include that second job.
That's smart. Okay, now let's move on to number four.
Number four. Okay, this is one of my favorites. Never treat with the insurance company's doctor or clinic. And
you mean they'll provide their own. They'll say, go to this guy or gal.
Exactly. It happens, you know, more often than I would like to see in the world, but it really does. And what I want all of the listeners out there to understand is that you have the absolute right under Illinois law to choose your own doctor. That's a very important concept. You know, that's a real sacred thing, the patient-doctor relationship. And so never let anybody dictate who your doctor should be. You know, so I always tell my clients, you have the absolute right to pick your doctor. In fact, under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act, you have a right to pick a second doctor.
For another opinion?
For a second opinion, yeah. Absolutely. And then there's a little nuance to the rule, and that's that if you get a written referral from one doctor to the next doctor, that second doctor doesn't count as your second doctor. It's part of an infinite chain of referral doctors that you're entitled to. So what I tell all my clients, and Jim does the same thing, is that if you're injured at work and you need to see a specialist, have your original doctor just write, you know, even if it's on a little prescription pad, you know, go see Dr. Smith. And that protects you, and the insurance company has to pay for it.
Smart.
And that's come back to hurt people, litigants who have been in front of me when I was the supervising judge, where they didn't get that referral, and then they went to other doctors after that. And those bills and whatever they had were not covered under the Workers' Compensation Act.
Interesting. I tell you what, we've got to take a commercial break. We got 5, 6, and 7 coming up for what to do if you were injured at work. Here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got the great Michael Miller, Jim McGing here, Miller and McGing, talking about workers' compensation. And, Michael, I guess I didn't know you combined there 4 and 5.
Fault, John. I got ahead of myself.
These are the steps to do if you're injured at work. And we talked about getting never use the insurance company's doctor. You can use your own, and you can always get a referral from your doctor to a second one.
Right, and then that's not deemed to be your second doctor, so you can keep going to see as many doctors as you need to, and the insurance company has to pay for it under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Law.
Great.
But get that written referral. So moving on to number 6, and this is something that comes up quite often, and my mantra on this, and I'll tell you what it is never allow an insurance company to deny you medical treatment, okay? And it sounds good, but how do you do that? Okay, well, Jim and I have come up with kind of a three-part strategy. If someone is injured at work and the workers' comp insurance company basically says, you know what, we're not going to pay for that. We don't think that's necessary. Or they send you to what's called an IME doctor, independent medical exam doctor, and that doctor sees you for 5 minutes and says, no, you don't need that particular treatment or you don't need that surgery. So in those situations, we've developed a strategy. And the first thing that we go to is we ask our client, do you have group health insurance? Because if you have group health insurance and you have a denial from workers' comp, then typically group health will have to cover it because it's denied.
Okay.
So we seek out their group health insurance. And sometimes that'll work, and then we can reimburse them later, you know, if we're successful in
winning the treatment.
Case. Get the treatment. Okay. So that's number one. The second one, let's say the person doesn't have group health insurance.
Okay.
Then what I do is I get on the phone and I talk to the particular provider and I give them a letter of protection. And I tell them, listen, this person needs this treatment. You recommended it. You know they need the treatment. And I'm going to win this case, so I'm going to give you a letter of protection, and we will take care of this out of on the back end.
Jim, is Michael always this confident? Because I do not want to talk to him on the other end of a phone call like this.
He's very confident, yes.
I don't want to mess with you when you're in that mode. You're a nice guy, but you got this look in your eyes right now when you're talking.
When it comes to denying my clients medical treatment, I get downright medieval. Because that's one of my pet peeves. I want my clients to recover. I want them to go back to work. I want them to feel better. And, you know, when an insurance company doesn't want to pay for things, it just kind of screws everything up. So that you'd be surprised that that letter of protection means a lot to these providers, especially from me, because they know that I'm going to, you know, go after that and I'm going to win it. And then the third thing that we can do is what's called a 19B petition. And this is something that's specific under the Workers' Compensation Act, where we can actually file a petition to seek these medical benefits if they're not being provided and get a hearing in front of an arbitrator. But, you know, long before I get to the 19B, usually number one or number two works. So my clients get their medical treatment, and that's what I'm most proud of, actually.
It's important. And number one, I mean, your health is number one.
Absolutely.
Right. For sure. All right. Here it is, drumroll, the seventh thing to do if you get injured at work.
Okay. Now, this applies to situations where, you know, somebody has a pretty significant injury and they're going to be off of work for a long time. So now we're kind of long into the case, yep. You know. And oftentimes when that happens, John, the insurance company will provide a rehabilitation nurse to take, you know, to go to the client's appointments, to follow their progress, to see their treatment. Sounds real nice, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? It's not so nice because a lot of the rehabilitation nurses are kind of there to prod the person along to get them back to work maybe before they're
ready. I've seen this on TV shows.
Yeah.
Are you telling me the insurance guy? I'm beginning to think that they're the bad guys here.
Well, they're not
the
always,
bad guys. I shouldn't have said
the bad
that.
Guys. We love insurance companies, yeah. But we, you know, we got to rein them in sometimes to make sure that they follow the law.
Right.
I mean, I just want people to follow the law. So one of my number seven rule here is never to let the rehabilitation nurse talk to your doctor without you there.
Makes sense to me.
Absolutely. And you'd be surprised at how often they try to talk to the doctors without the clients being present. And if they're discussing your health, John, you've got a right to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when I talk to rehabilitation nurses, you know, generally what I tell them is, you know what, just make sure my client's present when you talk to the doctor, number one. Number two, send me copies of everything that you send to the insurance company. If you can live with those two rules, welcome to the case.
And it's following up really quickly on that. I mean, should you be taking notes whenever possible for this stuff, so remember stuff for your recollection?
It's not a bad idea to do that, John. Yeah. You know, a lot of people, you know, don't do that, but yeah, you're thinking ahead, and like we said, you know,
I'm a smart guy.
Well, we made some suggestions to you off the air. I hope you follow them.
Oh, yeah,
that's
sure.
Actually a great thought about making notes. We've also had clients who have recorded their examinations with doctors because they oftentimes will tell us that they reference something to the doctor, and the doctor is listening to them, maybe taking notes, maybe entering that information later on, and trying to rely on their own memory. And oftentimes it doesn't reflect word for word what the patient has said to them.
Now, we are a two-party consent state, so I think the doctor has to know you're
recording.
Yeah,
they ask. Okay. You know, okay. And we've had clients who have asked their doctors because they said, oh, my husband can't come in, my spouse can't come in, whoever it is, and they've allowed them to record it, and then there's no issue.
That's a good idea. Gentlemen, we only have 2 minutes left. I know we want to talk about some other things here. You want to talk about COVID-19 protections for first responders?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that's a great topic.
Why don't we just jump into that right away? So there's a what's called a rebuttable presumption for a number of workers in Illinois if they were diagnosed with COVID. And those are first responders, police, fire, paramedics. Those are frontline workers, medical staff, nursing home workers, rehabilitation center workers, and then necessary workers, which was a designation that the governor gave to
grocery
workers, a whole number of people in different industries. Although there's a caveat for the necessary workers, the place of employment has to have a minimum 15 employees, and they have to encounter the public as part of the duties of their job. And that presumption is rebuttable, which means that the employer can present some evidence to rebut that at the Illinois Workers' Comp Commission. And they can do that by showing that if you work from home, you're not covered.
Okay.
If you were on leave, you're not going to be covered either if together there's at least 14 days prior to the date of your injury. And the
injury in this case is getting COVID.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. And they also follow if the employer followed the CDC or Illinois Department of Public Health guidelines and provided PPE equipment to their employees, that can rebut the presumption. And then lastly, if they can expose some alternative source of how you obtained
COVID.
Maybe you were at a family wedding and there was an outbreak. And they're able to point to that. So that presumption helps all of those workers in their workers' comp cases. And we're talking about serious injuries, long-termers.
Long haulers.
Long haulers. A serious thing, for sure.
And the presumption was for a period of time. It started March 9th of 2020, and it went until June 30th of 21. And that's the date of injury that you were unable to actually continue work because of a diagnosis of COVID, or you had symptoms during that period and we're unable to work.
Let me tell you something, listeners. We got to go to the news, but these two know what they're talking about. Seriously, they're good people, and they're going to help you out, and they have a bunch of other notes that we didn't have time to get to. We'll get to it next time. Promise you that. Michael Miller, Jim McGing from Miller & McGing. Thank you guys so much for stopping on by. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, John.
Thank you, for sure. WGNAccidentAttorneys.com. WGNAccidentAttorneys.com. Call 773-467-8000. 1-800-473-467-8000. I'm reading these twice because these guys know what they're talking about, Miller and McGing. Take care, guys. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks.
Time for the news on WGN.